445 on Downtown Message in the Bottle time. Brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company at 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. And Eric Meehan right here in studio with us. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. How's everybody doing out in Radioville?
We are lovely.
I hope you're good. We were off last week.
Yeah.
We forget what happened. We're stuck in the Iberian Peninsula. And yeah, I brought bubbles today because we've done kava before, but this was not a new to me, but it finally came back in sort of thing. So I said we're going to talk about Catalonia. We're going to talk about bubbles. We're going to talk about all that. We're going to talk about putting children in danger at Fort Knox. God bless that place. So Rich and I were just talking about how we're actually taking efforts this summer to be dads and be good family men and really do Maine. And it's been cool. Except for today, it's been very possible to do Maine pretty had. And I like that. Speaking of had and speaking of it, so I was listening to your segment on the soccer thing. So there's certain like regional dialects that I need to be, discussed at length by certain accents. And I think for especially given the World Cup, like I've now heard enough, British accents that are great. It's got to be Scottish for golf.
Yes,
I was trying to think like what would the quintessential Maine accent be calling? Like if ESPN cut to like their expert, what would it be? Like curling? Would it be lobster boat races? That would be excellent if like lobster boat races would become like this huge international event. They'd like cut to like, Rich. You don't have a great Maine accent. We need somebody with a great Maine accent.
Where is it they do the wife carry? Is that up at Sunday River?
Yeah. That would be a good one, too. But I feel like that would be you'd still have a Scottish announcer for that.
She's pretty solidly built there, by jeez. But, he tucked her up under there, and he's going pretty good. Yep.
We got to figure that out.
She's a hefty girl, but he managed to get her up there nicely.
It might have to be on, like, the Ocho, but I think we can pull that off. I think that would be really excellent. I
like that very much.
Yeah. No, the World Cup was really excellent. You got to love World Cup. Like, we're doing our beer club this month based on World Cup. I had, like, a lot of fun with it. I said, okay, we're going to take the final four, and we're... By the way, finding Croatian beer is impossible. So we're having Carlsberg owns the second or third biggest brewery in Croatia. So we're having Carlsberg Pilsner stand in for a Croatia. But we're doing, since Belgium lost, like everything, we're doing a sour for them. We figured that would work. And then for the UK, we're going to do some sort of bitter. And then for France, we're doing the nicest beer in the whole thing, and it's a Celebration Reserve beer, so that's been fun.
Wonderful.
However, Spain, we're not going to talk about that. So we'll talk about Spain wine. So folks, we talked 2 weeks ago with my friend Chris Campbell about Portugal, and I'm really glad that we got to have him on. Chris is, as I said, sort of doing Portuguese wine. He's actually doing wine from France and Italy and all sorts of other things, but he was the one who introduced me to Catalonia. What is Catalonia? Catalonia is the northeast corner of Spain. It's been the northeast corner of Spain not too long, and it's been a lot of things, because if you can picture the northeast corner of Spain, you've got the Pyrenees Mountains basically separating France from the Iberian Peninsula, and there's basically two ways around those mountains unless you're one of the Basque settlers that decided to make that their home. But it's extraordinarily steep, treacherous mountains. And so the easiest way, especially for, say, I don't know, an army to get around would be to go on either side. And so you're either, on the little crest there in the Atlantic Ocean, or you're here going up in through that passage up into southern France along the coast there. Like everybody... It's like the town bicycle, like everybody's had their turn. So the Greeks, the Carthaginians, the Romans, who obviously, were responsible for bringing the wine. It's always somebody else's place. And so now it's Spain's, but as you may have been aware, there's been recent movements to get it separated from Spain again. And that's been quite a point of political strife lately. And they're really different people. I mean, when you go to Catalonia... I remember actually on my honeymoon going to into Barcelona and going into the museums and seeing this language, which I assumed would be Spanish, would be like the sort of, one of the first translated languages, and it was all Catalan. And it's a very different thing. It's a very different culture. And it has some unique grapes that you're not going to see anywhere else. You have Charello, you have Macabeo, which you do see a little bit in southern France. You have Parellada. And then you also have things like Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and you have some even lesser known grapes that are being made into still wines along the coast. But the king of the region is definitely the sparkling wine that they make in and around the town of Saint-Sadonis-Adenoya. I always mess that up. But it's, you know, like I said, it's Catalan. I can't pronounce anything in Catalan. I can barely do Spanish. Catalan is like Spanish tongue-twisting. It's amazing. So it's dominated by two big houses that I'm sure you've heard of, Cordonnier and Fréjeuner. And those are, you know, I mean, if you find them out in the world, don't be afraid to drink them. I mean, they're kind of mass-produced, but they're still better mass-produced than a lot of mass-produced wines out there. So if you're buying wines for a wedding or something and you're on a budget, Fréjeuner is still perfectly acceptable. But you can do better from smaller houses, just as you can do better with anything else, like the house we're going to be talking about today. The grapes allowed are not just those native varietals. You are allowed to use other things, but there is a big push by the maker, Marcel Sabate, who created the wine that we're having today, a friend of mine, and he and a couple of other folks are trying to get only native varietal wines from that region separately appellated, as it were. We've talked about the concept of appellations. So they're trying to get that set aside so that their wines are deemed a little bit more special and regionally distinct. Most cavas are dry. They're sort of used as stand-ins for champagne, especially at this time of year. We have a lot of weddings. People are looking for, they come in, they say, oh, I want a champagne. And then I tell them that champagne starts around $40, $45 a bottle. And they say, we don't want that, but but what do we want? A lot of people jump to the Italian wine Prosecco, which is made differently than champagne. So I always try to also bring up the concept of cava. Cava is made in the exact same method as champagne. The champenoise, call it method champenoise, but otherwise it's known as, you know, the classical method or things like that. But it's basically it's a two-step, two fermentation process. And why is that important? Because today we're going to have a cava that is a brut nature. Now, there's been a big phenomenon, a shift where people are starting to drink drier and drier and drier. And of course, you're still going to have people who like the sweetness and whatever. But there's in Prosecco, which is traditionally, you know, 70% of it was made with a little bit of sweetness. Americans are demanding drier and drier. Cava, same sort of thing. So people are asking me a lot about non-dosage, brut nature, things like that. Lower, you know, much crisper wine. So we're gonna have today a brut nature. Brut nature is essentially, so no dosage is, you have to have a dosage to create champagne, right? Like you're adding a little bit of, it's basically sugar water to an already fermented wine, but it's a very, very tart wine. You want to get, it's going to be very, very acidic. And so the level of sugar that you're adding in there to do the secondary fermentation, you're going to add a little bit more sugar if you want it to be a little bit sweeter.
Where is that added in the process?
Let me start again. So you have still wines. You blend them into one wine, sort of a house cuvée, unless it's a vintage, right? It's coming from a specific year. And those wines are very high in acid. And you have yeasts in them that are floating around in sediments because they're not filtered or anything like that. And that's when the concept of riddling, you have it sort of turned at an angle, upside-down angle, and you're constantly turning it. Now they have big machines that do this, but in old days, if you ever see like a champagne rack, basically the bottle is inverted and you're slowly turning it like once a day and kind of getting all that yeast to settle right down at the neck of the bottle. And then you disgorge it and take all that yeast out and then put in a little dosage to get the bubbles going again. But the dosage is going to be so low in a brut nature that you're not going to have any like noticeable residual sugar on your tongue. So it's going to be what we're having right now. It's super crisp. It's like if you've ever had like a really tight Sauvignon Blanc, something that's like crispy, crispy, crisp. That's really where you're trying to get with this. And it's really excellent. So it brings out the aromatically, you get all that sort of biscuity, wonderful quality of a champenoise thing. But it's, you know, when it hits your palate, it's just like, woof.
That's perfect for a day like today.
It's perfect. It's also really, really good for food. Like, especially decadent food, it kind of, you know, whisks it away a little bit when you need it whisked away. Sometimes if you're having like foie gras and it's like just so intensely rich, you need something you know, for all those times that we're just sitting around having foie gras over
in the studio.
Yeah.
At the shop.
There's an idea. Maybe next week we'll do foie.
Wow.
Right. But yeah, so anyway, I know I'm running out of time. So before I run out of time, I did want to mention moving on from this. And we can talk a little bit more about Catalunya before we talk about Tempranillo next week. But we are having a couple of excellent tastings that I want people to come to in the shop this Thursday from 5 to 7. We're going to have my friend Lee Renucci, who I went to France with. She works for a company called Wine Traditions. And they're good friends of mine, worked with their wines forever. So we're going to be sampling some of those wonderful French gems really sort of off the beaten path wine. So if you enjoy that sort of thing, if you've kind of had too many, you know, California cabs or Bordeaux or Chiantis, come and check it out. And then on the 7th of August, we're having the Burgundy producer Guy Chaumont. He is taking his first U.S. junket, and he is stopping at Bangor Wine and Cheese on the 7th from 5 to 7 p.m., and he's going to show off all of his stuff. And he has really, really cool Burgundies that do not cost an arm and a leg. And I think you'll be really kind of fascinated with what he can tell you, because a producer can tell you so much more than a wine merchant, because frankly, they're the ones getting their hands dirty. do come to both of those, and come and check out the Castelroche Brut Natur Reserve Cava while I still have a couple bottles left in stock. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you, Eric. Eric May and Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. Message in the bottle here on Downtown.